On this week's episode, I'm talking to Chris Spann, the lead technical SEO over at Lumar, all about security and SEO and why security people should care about SEO and why us SEO people should care about security. Coming up on this week's episode of Search with Cat. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of season 3 of Search with Kanda. I think it's actually like episode 240 something or something like that in if we count all the previous episodes. I am your host, Jack Chambers Ward, and we are back. That is right, we're carrying on season 3 with a fantastic guest, Chris Spann from Lumar, talking all about cybersecurity and why us SEO should care about it and why cybersecurity people should also care about SEO. So kind of coming at it from both sides. Chris has some experience in both and has a really interesting story about why he cares about both of those things and why you should be caring about it if you're working in security or SEO. So stay tuned for that fantastic conversation after a word from our sponsors. First sponsor for this week's episode is Also Asked. You can go to alsoask.com and check out this fantastic and unique intent research tool. As we probably already know, search intent is at the core of everything we do as SEOs. Even if you're not directly working in content, understanding what your users are trying to achieve through their searches is still pretty important. I think we can all agree. On top of this, Google has told us that it takes up to 9 searches for users to complete their goals. This can be a pretty hard picture to capture, to be honest, with traditional keyword research tools. So what if you could get hold of up-to-the-minute questions that users have asked that have been clustered by intent by Google themselves? Well, that's exactly what Also Asked actually does. Also Asked mines and organizes Google's People Also Asked data in real time, showing you the next most likely question your searchers are going to ask. Best of all, it's completely free. You don't even need to create an account to try out Also Asked. Of course, if you do find it useful, there are paid options as well. We have the free, we have the light, and we have the pro options in terms of accounts that you can subscribe to. At the touch of a button from these accounts, you can download not only the questions people are asking, but also the answers Google has selected, the website URLs, and the titles that are ranking for those answers as well. Also Asked has the world's only API for People Also Asked data, meaning you can combine this data you're pulling from whatever questions you're asking directly into tools. You can combine it with things like ChatGPT to really supercharge your content briefs and transform the way you write content at scale. Go to alsoasked.com and check out this fantastic intent research tool. Our next sponsor is Core Updates. That is the latest newsletter from the one and only Mark Williams Cook. You may know Mark from his unsolicited SEO tips and his appearances on this very show. He started this podcast, in fact, and is going to be my co-host every single month on our monthly news recap episodes. But if you just want a bit more Mark, you want all of his unsolicited SEO tips, get them actually solicited directly to your inbox every single week. You get the latest episode of this podcast. You get all of the latest SEO news and articles that Mark has selected and thinks are the things you should be paying attention to. All of that delivered to your inbox every single Monday. So if you want to get, like I said, Mark's usual recaps and stuff, it is one of the best places to go for the latest SEO news and pretty much what you can expect from the best in the industry when it comes to the articles and news that is going on, any updates from Google and all that kind of stuff. Go to coreupdates.com and sign up today to get SEO news, brand new episodes of this very podcast, and Mark's SEO tips delivered straight to your inbox. Coreupdates.com is the place to go. My guest this week has more than 10 years of experience in SEO and is currently the senior technical SEO at Lumar. Welcome to the show, Chris Spann.
Hi, nice to be here.
Nice to be have you here. It's great. We've been talking on Twitter back and forth a little bit and been chatting around and having a conversation about podcasting and SEO and all that kind of stuff. And I love it when we get a technical SEO person in to talk about technical stuff. And we're going to be talking about security and SEO, and I kind of started off with like, and how they can work together. And I think you're kind of like, and how they often clash. So I think it's going to be an interesting conversation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been, I'm more interested in it than most, I have learned over the last few years, but I think it's really interesting given my unique circumstances.
Well, hopefully this will open it up to the rest of both the SEO and security world, and we'll get more people interested in, like we said, how they cross over, how they can benefit, and how they kind of clash and stuff. So should we start off with your background then? We're kind of leading straight into what brought you to the topic, what inspired you to make it the thing you're passionate about and seemingly no one else is passionate about.
Yeah, so basically, I started in SEO in 2008, 9, something like that. And at the time I was working for a price comparison group who, because we held or we would process payment cards for some things, we actually had to be, or I think we ended up being like bank level secure, you know what I mean? So,
wow.
You know, to the point where background checked when you came in, all that kind of thing, right? And what would happen over time is that randomly things would be declared an issue and would stop working. So one day we came in and we couldn't access any Google accounts for anything, right?
Oh, because, excellent. That's always good. Yeah. You don't need that for SEO at all. That's fine.
Well, exactly. Or paid search. You know what I mean? because what had happened was someone somewhere had decided that they were blocking off all access to all webmail accounts, which I understand. But I think at the time, not so much. Like, I don't think you need one for Webmaster Tools, though it's been a long time since I tried to do one without one. But I know there's certain paid stuff that you just couldn't log into. It just didn't work because of the domains they were blocking. And so this kind of led me on to just wondering why a lot of things. And the problem with a lot of security teams is the why is often difficult to get out of them. Because especially if one of the things they're tasked with is like internal security, they don't want to tell you why, because you will then work out ways around it or how they've done it, because you can then work out ways around it. Another instance being when I was in house, we couldn't access Google Cache because it's technically a proxy, right? So, and again, but no, because it's technically a proxy, was never given to us. But what happened was, my best friend, we were each other's best men, etc., worked on that security team. So I had more of an in than the rest of the SEO team.
Would you get like the conversations in the pub and then you'd actually hear like the other side of the story of like, oh, you guys do that thing while we're doing this thing, right?
Yep.
Okay,
that makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah. And you get that foot in the door, the insight that other people don't get if you don't sit down and actually have a conversation.
Because obviously security teams and network teams by their nature are pretty cagey about telling anyone anything, right?
So they don't want to share like lunch, let alone a password.
Well, exactly. So that would be a whole thing. Excuse me. And then obviously at the time we were an SEO team that was trying to build a lot of links and do things like that. And when we didn't have the ability to, we didn't have any resource to like get, you know, a microsite spun up or something like that, or a landing page with an interesting asset on it or whatever. So we would find ways around it, and we would quite often find ourselves at the on the wrong end of our network team. And so it's just always been a constant back and forth. And I say then with the conversations with my friend in the back of it, just led me to always be interested in the two. And I've always had an interest myself in well, what happens if I take this thing and try and do something that I'm not really supposed to do with it, or something that no one's considered trying?
Learning by pushing the boundaries, right? And just testing the envelope and seeing what happens.
Yeah, and modding things and hacking things and stuff like that. You know, I'm awful for getting into something and then immediately going, okay, I've put it together now. Now what can I do with it? What can I take off and replace with something else that comes from some sketchy, you know, Chinese website or something like that? So it's just always been a big interest of mine. And then as I've got more technical and learned more about how the web works, and especially now working for a large enterprise crawler, we need to know a bit more of this stuff as well. We need to know why things aren't working. So that's kind of how I've ended up where I am now.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing because security does come up occasionally. Like I'm thinking of when we're using crawlers like Luma, like Sitebulb, like Screaming Frog, whatever it is, like you occasionally get those alerts that kind of probably should come under the security banner rather than an SEO thing. I don't know. We've had conversations with the team here at Canda of like, we should still probably tell the client about this, but this is kind of not our responsibility. Like, hey, by the way, half of your blog posts are something, a simple that we talk about in SEO all the time, HTTP instead of HTTPS, right? Like a simple little browser-based thing like that. Or a whole other thing of like, hey, we found a bunch of like really not safe for work URLs somewhere that I don't think are part of your content, unless they are, and then cool, that's fine, whatever. But yeah, I know I was talking to a friend of mine who works for a different agency, and they had found a bunch of hacked URLs that were essentially just loads of porn, loads of porn all over the place. And it's almost like the piggyback SEO, the stuff we've seen recently, a lot of people doing that, like chucking their affiliate links into Harvard and all that kind of stuff, like that parasite SEO kind of stuff. And I think when you see that kind of touched upon but never really discussed in like, right, but how does that work? Like,
yeah,
how does that get solved? How does that get identified? And a lot of the times I feel like SEO people will see a security thing and be like, and anyway, off it goes. That's not my problem. Like,
but here's the thing, right? Yeah, they are your problem, because guess
yeah,
what?
Absolutely.
You get hacked, Google finds out. You get penalties. You get manual actions. And furthermore, there's a few things as well that might not necessarily get you a manual action, but will make your listings in the SERPs look real bad. Which then just causes the same problems. No one wants to click on it. Reputational damage. If you're KPI'd on traffic, reputational damage ends up hurting you just as much as anything else, because you can rank as well as you can, but if you're that site that got hacked, no one's going to click on you anyway. So
yeah, exactly. So let's talk about crawling, I think, because that is a big thing. I think a lot of people, we're talking about crawling, we're talking about indexing a lot in 2024. I think a lot of people are kind of saying getting indexed is going to be harder than ever. There's more competition on the SERPs than ever, and there's something you just touched on there, is getting weird bits in the SERPs, I think, is always interesting. But seeing weird things when you're crawling, and depending on what user agent you're using, and do you think there's a lot of value in there, and kind of like you said, pushing the boundaries of crawlers and testing different options out, and kind of seeing what each different crawler type picks up, even different user agents pick up and stuff like that?
Yeah, and so this is one of the interesting things about doing what we do. So as there'll be a few teams in the business that will have crawlers or similar-ish things, but almost everyone else in the business is interested in what a user sees. And so the tools they use are going to be trying to recreate a user. So they might actually be using Chromium or something like that and actually rendering pages and trying to be as close to the real user experience as possible. But only we are interested in what Google sees. And
yeah,
what Google sees is the one that's really interesting to how things look in the search engine, in the SERPs, right? So the famous one, there was I wrote a blog post about this. There's an old hack, and it still comes up every now and then, that used to be called the pharma hack, as in pharmacy, as in big pharma. And effectively what that'll do is, if you visit the affected website as a user, it'll look absolutely fine. If you switch your user agent to Googlebot, there will be thousands or millions of extra pages that are linked to, normally with links to just weird Chinese websites and Chinese casino sites and things like that. And this is all hidden, right? Because as a user, you're clicking around the site, you would never see it. But only we really particularly care about how Google sees the site. Only we really Google. Well, it normally happens one of two ways. All your web teams and things like that will just have URLs sat there in their browser, and they will just go straight to them. And they'll just go straight to the site every day. Or maybe it's the homepage on your VPN, whatever. So you never, or maybe if you're on the VPN, you might never see the actual live website. You only see a production version that lives in your VPN, right? So it's one of two people who find it. It's either, well, one of three, I guess. It's either paid search, organic, or someone like the CEO or something who is Googling the website they work for. Because only they do, for some reason. They can't go to, you know, business I've invested all my life into.com. So they find it. And obviously that's worse, because then everybody gets in trouble. But it's things like that, that help you find these things. And obviously the other side of this, in terms of crawling, again, working for a crawler, is we often have to come up with clever ways to identify ourselves to websites and to Cloudflare and things like that, to basically say, not only are we Lumar, but we are this client's Lumar account that is crawling. You know what I mean? And
and
things like that. Because again, when I was working the price comparison group, that's what we had to do. It was essentially we had a custom user agent that had a generated 16-bit string on the end that only myself and the guy on the network team knew. So wow. He then knew that that particular string was safe. That was definitely us.
So you just whitelist you straight away. And,
then we could be allow listed straight through. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Whereas, because obviously at the same time, obviously we're a legit business.
Thanks for clarifying that, by the way.
Yeah. As I said that, I was just like, we didn't need to say that, Chris. But you know what I mean? We are, people recognize the name and et cetera, et cetera. There's nothing actually stopping you from just saying you are Luma, you know what I mean? Or using Luma for, you know, for the stuff it's not supposed to, or, you know, a heavy competitor crawling, you know, regardless of whether you see it as morally or whatever, okay. If you run a million-page website and someone is using their crawler to crawl your website, well, I can understand why you wouldn't want to spend the resource on serving your website to a competitor, right? So we have all these different things where we run into security teams all the time. And I've kind of gone a little bit all over the place here. But basically what happens is that this is kind of the first level, right? So again, because I do a lot of onboardings with clients, and we'll run the crawler and they'll come back and say, hey, we got 100 URLs worked, and then we just got all these weird errors. And then what you start doing is looking at that and going, right, that's Cloudflare telling us to go away. But what you can do is, what we do is we extract the what's called the Ray ID from a Cloudflare error page, which is like the unique, that is the transaction that created that specific page. So then you can provide those to network teams. The network teams then can then start working out what rules have affect those, because sometimes it might not even be user agent. It might just be any user agent that makes more than X requests in Y time.
Yeah, I've encountered that with a client before. They were a pretty small site and for whatever reason had been set up with that. If it starts requesting, it was over a certain percentage of the total pages. So like as the site grew, I think when we first onboarded them, they were like 300 products or something like that. By the time, you know, a couple of years later, it was closer to 2,000-3,000 products. So they'd really expanded their range and broadened out to working in Europe and all this kind of stuff. But the same rules still applied. And I was like, you know, after, so what was 80% when you set up the rule of 200 pages is now like 5% of your total website, and you're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah,
nobody can crawl anything.
Yeah,
and I had the exact same issue.
I saw a similar thing with a client who I can't remember the specifics of it now, but they had inadvertently created some sort of infinite pagination, or
oh, that's always fun,
or something anyway, or it was infinite parameterized links back to the homepage.
Ooh, nice. So infinite duplications of the homepage. Kind of
Yeah. And obviously we were crawling these, but then for whatever reason, one of the JavaScript libraries they were using was hotlinked. So as in not on any of their own kit. So what was happening was eventually that wherever was hosting that JavaScript was giving up and going, nah, you've asked for this JavaScript about 500 times in the last half an hour now. I'm not giving it to you anymore. That broke the render. Because it was fascinating, because you could see when we ordered the failures by time that there was nothing, and then a spike, and then it just went whoop like that. And that spike was the initial thing, and then it just went, yeah, nothing's working now. So I get so carried away on these things. I could talk about weird ephemera of crawling websites for hours. I mean,
that's why we're here, Chris. That's why we're here. To talk about weird ephemera. If Search Wakanda is anything, it's talking about weird ephemera around SEO. I think there's a big part of like looking into Search Console and finding a lot of this stuff as well. Like something I've definitely been talking about with clients and coming around to the whole crawled not indexed issue and all that kind of stuff. And it kind of points out like, oh, this is a you issue. This is a website issue. This is a Google issue. Leave this with us. We'll sort it out kind of thing. I guess a similar kind of rule applies for when we're thinking about it from a security perspective as well. Like I mentioned, we mentioned user agents, we mentioned crawlers and all that kind of stuff. Working out like what is good for SEO and what needs to be done, and then what you should actually be blocking. Where would you typically kind of like have that conversation and draw the line? Say you're onboarding a new client, where's the kind of best place to start for working out what is and what isn't good for Google and for SEOs?
Yeah. So obviously, by default, obeyyourrobots.txt, most tools at least give you the option to. it is always of interest to not to every so often crawl without obeyingrobots.txt because
see what happens.
Guess what? Bad guys don't like rules. So it's always worth doing that. Also, but then in terms of robots.txt, if you've got some super secret folder on your site, don't put that in your robots.txt because that's by definition, a robots.txt is a big list of things that you don't really want people to see. And that can vary, you know, from stuff you really don't want people to see just down to, well, it's just not really of use to any, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, don't put, you know, / super secret test project / in your robots.txt or something.
And unless you're doing it for a laugh.
Unless you're doing it, yeah.
Few things make nerdy technical SEOs laugh more than jokes in robots.txt.
Well, I was about to say, I imagine if you go to... Mind you, I was going to say, I'm sure you'd find something if you went to Oliver Mason's, but I imagine if you went to Oliver Mason's... No, if you went to Oliver Mason's, you will find another website, as far as I remember.
You do, yeah. We have an Easter egg in the Canda one, so if you go to the withcanda.co.uk, there is a blocked, I think it's sofa or couch, and then if you go to that, it's a picture of Snoop, the dog who hangs out in the office, so... Because he's not allowed on the couch. He's blocked from the couch. It's like, aha.
Fantastic.
That's a classic Mark Williams Cook right there.
I've seen a few as well where it's just like, you know, / all robots, block, kill everyone now or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
but no, the Search Console thing is really interesting. And it's a thing that I love talking about because it's a thing that people don't realize. And this is, again, the great thing about having a friend in the network team was that it went both ways because he knew the sort of things that we could do. Because we forget that especially crawlers, even, I don't want to say even Screaming Frog, but you know what I mean? Like Screaming Frog is a really powerful tool for, you know, sites up to 10,000. Well, it depends how good your PC is, right? But, you know, up to a few thousand pages, Screaming Frog's amazing. And we have a really unique set of tools as SEOs because we've got Google Analytics that most other people don't care about. We've got Search Console that nobody else actually cares about. We've normally got access to logs and things like that. And we've got, we look at the SERPs, which say most other people aren't interested in particularly. We, you know, we track what's going on in those and we pay attention to the you know, the titles and the descriptions and things like that. So we've got this really bizarre tool set and so much of it bleeds over between the two. Excuse me. Just going back to the block thing, we had a client a while ago and we were looking into some issues with them and they had a lot of quite thin content and it was all UGC, but it wasn't all great quality. And they felt like they weren't being crawled enough. And they gave us some logs, which I started looking into, and then there was one day or one hour, I think, in this 30-day period or whatever, where it was like, and we're talking literally sort of tens to twenties of requests, and then there was one day where it was like 1,000 or something like that, and straight away you go, well, that's, and this is the thing that I think is SEO, so this is what you talked about before when you're saying, well, that's not really my job. Maybe it's just my brain that goes, this is a rabbit hole. But it's just so interesting because you can start to dig down it and go, right, well, why was there 1,000? So straight away, obviously, I go, well, what happened there? Was that Google?
Yeah.
Immediately, I'm like, right, well, that's not coming from any of the IPs that the Googlebot lists. So pretty sure it's not Googlebot. But again, only an SEO would know, like a network guy may well look at that and go, Googlebot UA, move on. But I recognize what probably is or probably isn't the Googlebot IP.
Yeah.
And then start to drill down. And then basically what I found was it was hitting, so it was a WordPress site, or it was a site with a WordPress section, and it was hitting endpoints that with no, what am I trying to say? Basically, it was hitting URLs that if the site was using certain plugins that had attack vectors within them, it would then be able to execute. Basically, there was a certain PHP plugin that you could fire a request at it and it would just execute whatever the request was. Didn't matter what it was. So basically someone somewhere was pretending to be Googlebot and firing a few thousand, basically trying to hack the site.
Right. Yeah.
As SEOs, we noticed that because I was looking at a crawling issue over here, you know what I mean? And so we will be able to raise that with them and have them go, okay, cool. Right. We can actually start doing something to fix this. And then in Search Console, we see all kinds of things. I mean, number one, and you can do this obviously in your ranking software as well, but actually, obviously with your ranking software, you go, right, because you're paying per keyword at that point, right, quite often, or, you know, per whatever. So you want your target keywords in there and you want all that stuff. You actually might not be aware of some of the things that you are ranking for. Again, we had another client ages ago now, who wanted to kind of prove out to leadership that, again, UGC, but they wanted to prove out to leadership that they had a big problem with content that they didn't want there, for being NSFW in various different ways. And they asked us to go and just kind of put some information together to demonstrate the size of the issue. And I guess actually this isn't, well, I suppose it is security. Effectively, what we found, so again, I went off and thought, well, I know I'm going to find some porn because, you know, it's the internet, right? That's where it lives.
It's hard to not find it.
Well, exactly, yeah. I thought, you know, maybe I'd find some, you know, links to torrents or, you know, whatever. But we found, in the end, I put together kind of a zip file with was just like, here are some URLs that I'm not clicking on. Here is, you know, if you want to Google the words that are in those URLs and see what and read the Wikipedia pages it shows you, feel free.
maybe not on a work computer.
But. Well, maybe not on a computer that, you know, that you aren't going to throw in the sea afterwards. You know what I mean? Like, it was real bleak. And yeah, we just were, again, just using SEO stuff, like looking in Search Console and going, no, these pages have got clicks next, right? At the very worst, again, this is reputational nightmare waiting to happen, you know? So you need to get in and you need to start looking at these things. And it's just, again, it's from being an SEO. And this is, more than anything, that was a reputational thing. Because, again, it wasn't strictly security, I suppose, because these people were logged in users putting that stuff there. They were using the site. For its intended purpose, but putting in unintended content on there, I guess.
So. Yeah. I think log files are such something we've touched on a couple of times on the show before, and I find so fascinating. I've only ever dipped my toe in once or twice, to be honest, when it comes to working with clients and that kind of thing. Do you think it's something you should be keeping an eye on regularly? Because obviously you've got the little kind of like crawl report thing in Search Console, but Do you think it's actually worth kind of having that chat with the network team and being like, hey, can I get direct access to the log files and see what's going on here? Or should that be kind of a emergency only kind of situation?
I mean, we're 23 minutes and 37 seconds in. It's time for the first It Depends.
Hey, there we go. Everybody drink.
but the setup of your business is gonna change that enormously. So if you are a smallish business, the great thing about Search Console is it's just an unfiltered list of URLs, right? And that's the great thing about that crawl thing. It's just unfiltered list of URLs. Sometimes it's confounding. Like, I'm sure you've got big clients where there's URLs in there that you don't understand how they're creating those URLs. we had in my old job an instance where we were getting loads of URLs in that crawl report. And it was basically Google just finding the like a stub of a URL in some JavaScript. Well, I'm going to append that to the end of the domain and see what happens. Oh, it's broken. And then complaining to us about the fact that the link it made up didn't work. Great. Okay, cool. Thanks. so we look at that stuff. And obviously you don't need log files for that. And then there is a sweet spot between the two, because once your site reaches a certain size, you've probably got a network team, you've probably got a Cloudflare or something like that that's sitting in front of it, and that's going to do a lot of the work for you, because that's what you pay Cloudflare for, right? Mm-hmm. As you set it up and you leave it, and then obviously you start to run into problems if you need an industrial crawler or something like that to run on the site, but Cloudflare lets Google through and it does the other things. But there definitely is a sweet spot in the middle where no one else is going to look at it, you know what I mean? Where the infrastructure guys is probably just the same guy who does front-end changes or whatever. And in that instance, if you can get hold of log files, because the other thing is as well, if your business is above a certain size, log files get increasingly difficult to get hold of.
Yeah.
Because again, you start running into, like, I think technically IPs are a bit iffy in terms of GDPR.
Yes, yeah.
So, and then that's the thing, because like we've had places where they've said, "Oh, network, we can give you log files. They won't be useful."
We'll strip all the useful information out.
Yeah, yeah, because we'll have to strip out. So again, they have to strip out anything that might be, you know, a log of someone sending your address or their credit card number, their phone number.
The identifiable information that GDPR talks about, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes they have to strip all that stuff out and say sometimes it can be a real issue just with IP. Some network teams, you can say, okay, well, can you just send me the stuff that is a Googlebot user agent? That makes life a lot easier sometimes. So there's ways and means around it, but I would say it's always worth the biggest thing, and the thing that I try and advocate for is to explain, especially if you're a more technical SEO, is to try and have a team member of the network team that gets, because at the end of the day, if the business you both work for makes more money, you both benefit from it, right? So if they can understand why you're trying to crawl 10,000 pages in an hour or whatever, then they can either tell you, they might tell you they can't do it. And then maybe you've got to try and, you know, escalate it above them if it's really important to you, or you might be able to accept it. In other instances, you might be able to explain to them, well, we need to because of this, or this might be of use to you. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I think it's something that kind of red tape you hit a couple of times. Like you said, as soon as the company gets bigger and bigger, something I talked about with Matt Hepburn a few weeks ago about enterprise SEO, like as soon as you hit a company big enough, there is layers and layers and layers, and it gets exponentially more difficult the bigger the company gets, right? You start with like, oh, it's 20 people. Like, yeah, you kind of can get to know everyone. And then as soon as you get to 200, that's not 10 times more complicated. That's 100 times, 1,000, 10,000 times more complicated, and more departments and all that kind of stuff. And I think almost like building those relationships, like you said there, like if you had your best man from your wedding on the network team, it doesn't get much better than that. But I think there's an element there of like that human relationship. So as much as we're talking about the very technical, very robot, very, you know, internet, all that kind of stuff side of it, there is a human element to this as well, right? Of understanding, like you said, understanding GDPR from that perspective. Like you and I were both kind of, yeah, we kind of know vaguely like identifiable information is not going to be available and all that kind of stuff. And having a kind of basic understanding of what is useful for you, but what is actually available and possible, I think is useful. How do you find kind of like managing that relationship? Say, for example, take your best man out of
it.
And it's just you talking to a network team and kind of trying to build that relationship. What are kind of the things you think of where it's important for us to kind of sell it to them and understand where they're coming from, and vice versa, to understand where we're coming from and kind of like, hey, here's what SEOs need, what do you need from us kind of thing.
Yeah. The big thing, I think, is demonstrating your, and this is going to sound mercenary, I guess, but demonstrating your worth back to them. or, you know, showing them that, because again, the likelihood is within the business, the technical SEO and the network team are the people who are most able to crawl or look at an entire website in live, because it's their jobs to know what the website looks at, how it behaves under certain conditions in live. So again, highlighting things like HTTP page. I mean, maybe not if it's just a link and those links are being 301 or HSTS in, but things like if all of a sudden in that list of crawled domains in Search Console, there's a dev environment, then you can say to your network team, hey, have a look at that. things like, you know, quite often as SEOs, we have Google alerts set up for clients or for the business that we work for. And they can pick up some fascinating things. So doing a site:github.com search for the name of your business, because sometimes you will find one of two things. You'll either find a public script set up there that has you listed in some sort of, you know, as part of some sort of attack, or some dev has dropped a bit of code into their public repo that's, you know, got shared keys in it or something like that, and all of a sudden they are now on the web available to find. You know, ditto. I saw, in fact, was it? I think it was Mark from Canada saying the other day about indexed
Google pages. Yeah, Google Docs
with passwords in.
Yeah, because I know if you can open up, you can tick the like shareable and able to search button on Google Docs, right? And yeah, that gets indexed, and some people just have a passwords .doc and just all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Trello boards, similar thing. Trello boards.
Absolutely.
I think now by default are non-indexed, but it used to be the other way around, and some of them still are indexed. And again, not uncommon for people to leave passwords all over Trello, right? So as people who have alerts to these things or who know site operators and things like that, and some network teams, again, well-resourced network teams will have things in place to look at these, but some won't, or some will be some, you know, your network team again will be one person who is like the DB guy, and he does all the back end stuff or all the infra stuff, and network security is a small part of his job. So by being able to show them that, hey, we're looking at this stuff, hey, we care about this stuff, and that's the big thing. Because for me, 15 years ago, SEO had a real cowboy, it's less so now, but especially in the business I was in, we had a real cowboy reputation, which we, you know, say we didn't help because, you know, we were...
I think we're all content goblins and alligators and stuff now, aren't we? That's the evolution we've seen.
But obviously we were, it was a classic example of just the business not working, but we were targeted on links and traffic and things like that. So we would do, and at the time the targets that we had, we knew were next to impossible, but we got a bonus if we hit them, right? So it's a horrible situation because you knew the SEO was bad, and you know this business got a penalty, right? So because we knew what we were doing was bad, but that was the strategy, such as it was at the time. So by saying to the network team or your security team, no, I do care about this, and I do understand, you know, past that one thing you make me do once a year where I click don't open any phishing emails, don't, you know, if I find a USB stick in the car park, don't put it in the, yeah, that stuff. If you go past that and you say things like, hey, I found a dev environment in the list of crawled subdomains, they'll care about that. Potentially, you know what I mean? Again, we had a business. I was looking at a load of weird, just odd subdomains. You were looking at it and kind of going, it looks like there's words in there, but I can't quite. And it turns out you're pointing at, it's not even what I thought it was going to be. They are a non-UK business. And it turns out what I was looking at and going, that looks like, it looks like words, but I don't, it's like I don't understand them. They were the names of the developers.
Right.
Each of them had their own public version of the site that it turns out was crawlable. So
I have seen dave.domain. I saw again, there was a French guy who one of the developers and had written like dev, like words related to developer stuff for various different testing sites. So there was like performance, he was like testing different like speed analysis stuff, and like he would have a different dev site for each one, and all of the words were in French, and I was like, I mean, that kind of looks like the word performance, but I guess like it's speed, that's not spelled the same way, like what is that? And I was like frantically googling and trying to work it out. I was like, oh, you've got like four or five different dev sites going on, different staging sites to test different elements and do all this. It was a big e-commerce site, and they had a bunch of stuff, and I had seen weird subdomains in Search Console, like what is going on here? And yeah, very similar experience where like I love the idea that everyone gets their own little site. You just get a Jack dot and a Chris dot and so when we're thinking about the kind of selling it to them and explaining why it's important to us, right, I think bringing that business element into it is really important as well, like we're saying, you bring an element where it's not just don't write your passwords down, don't blah, blah, blah. Like, you take it to that next level and you show some interest. You're like, oh, by the way, here's a crawlable subdomain. They're like, oh, this guy actually might know a little bit about what he's talking about. Yep. And then why that is important is because it impacts us, and, you know, whether you're marked on KPIs in terms of traffic or revenue or whatever it is, like, it's going to affect the site and the company as a whole at the end of the day and all that kind of stuff, right? I find that kind of like finding common ground and common goals between you and developers and network teams and all that kind of stuff being a key to kind of making sure everyone's understanding each other and singing from the same hymn sheet, rather than, well, my KPIs are traffic, so you need to sort this out. It's like a, this is how it will affect everyone.
Yeah. And ultimately, security are, they're not just, you know, when we think about security and cybersecurity, we think about, like, you know, hackers draining bank accounts and stuff like that, right? Well, not even, right? We see it all the time. Or, you know, not even in terms of, like, in the video game space, where, you know, where they have leaks and things like that, and not even necessarily, you know, personal information about staff and things. The example we were talking about before, where each dev had their own subdomain that was crawlable. Well, what if one particular dev is working on the big new product launch, or rebuilding, you know, doing the redesign that's been under wraps for the last year or something like that? Or, you know, as I say, has on the front page, we now do this or that, or we are merging with, you know, and these are things that cause reputational damage. They cause deals to go under. They do all these things. Again, depending on the country you're in, depending on the issue that you have, you can be fined for them as well.
Yeah, that's, you can break contracts for that kind of stuff.
Exactly. So yeah, NDAs can go under because of these things, right? So they're not just focused on credit card numbers and you know, information about, you know, all that stuff. It's not always as James Bond as that, right? Sometimes it's just Google found something and indexed it. I mean, what was the there was a famous story a few years ago, and I think it was the Mirror Group, maybe. And the way their URLs used to work is that the stories would have a UID in them, so like a 12 or 16 digit UID, and that was what their servers would use to generate the story. And then afterwards, there would be some words, and those words were just there for SEO. So it would take, you know, Claudia Winkleman reveals secrets of her fringe or whatever, and then the URL would be some numbers, and then Claudia Winkleman secrets fringe, and then that they do that for SEO. And then people realized those words had no bearing on anything, and you could put anything you wanted in there. And then if you pointed enough links at them, it would rank. So there was a famous story where, I can't remember what the story was, but it was like some horrible puff piece that one of the papers had done. And a load of mischievous SEOs got that story to rank with something like, we'll print any old crap or something like that. Like,
oh,
hanging off,
yeah,
the
that does
of,
ring a bell. Yeah.
It was a really long time ago. And every time I think about it, I can't find it, because I would love to find it as an example of...
The irony being it's probably not indexed anymore.
Well, yeah. But for a while, like, it ranked first for like a load of pages. So there's that stuff as well, right? That's... you know, people messing around, and probably no one saw that outside of a few SEOs or whatever. But depending on what you do in that situation, people could get, you know, again, defamatory language put into URLs, or especially if, God forbid, you're in that situation where you have something that's in your URLs affecting the code on the page, because then you can really start to, you know what I mean? So if someone could get in a position where they could get a certain parameters on the end of the URL that changes where it normally says "Hello, Jack" to say, like, you know, "We hate competitors," or, you know, some political thing or whatever, right? And then that gets indexed. That's real bad. There's no customer data, and no one's getting their money stolen. But security care about these things.
Yeah, I think it's something like you said, the James Bondification of it all. We always think of security as, they're going to steal your identity and go and do a bank heist under the name of Jack Chambers Warden. Oh my God, they got a copy of my passport and all this kind of stuff. But like, it's not, the vast majority of that, like, perfect example, you're talking about the recent leaks from like what happened with Rockstar, what happened with Insomniac and the video game industry. Like, oh yeah, wow, we've got new footage of the new Insomniac game. I know listeners and viewers, maybe not as nerdy as Chris and I, but I'm going to talk about Insomniac for a brief second because I don't get to talk about it very often. And it was like, oh, there's leaked footage of the new Wolverine game that they're working on. It's like, okay. And there was a whole discussion in the like gaming community of like, do we cover this as news now? Like, is this a thing? Like, how does that? And you're saying like reputational damage. Like, thankfully, you know, the majority, the sane people in the industry were very supportive and be like, we're so sorry to hear. Also, as you said earlier, there was personal information that was leaked in that instance. But like, that changes I think it had their like next 7, 8, 10 years like planned out in a roadmap and all that kind of stuff. When you get that kind of stuff for your business, as you were saying, oh, here's the new product launch, here's our merger, here's this, here's whatever. You would hope that, like, you know, Business Insider or whatever your industry equivalent of that is covering, like, oh, it turns out this, I don't know, podcasting company is going to be merging with this podcasting company, and oh, they covered it on podcastnews.com or whatever. Like, that can be a pretty big deal to, as we mentioned, the CEO and people like that earlier, who usually don't care about security even slightly.
And this is it, right? So the example, again, talking of roadmaps, Microsoft or Xbox's roadmap, and I think it was out of date when it got leaked, but that got leaked 6 months ago, a year ago, something like that. And again, obviously, you know, their main competitor is Sony, and if Sony were to be seen to do anything off the back of that, it would look real bad for Sony, right? But if you're in, I don't know, if you make car parts and somebody gets hold of your next 6 months, that's way different. You know what I mean? That's far more, you know, you're not celebrity businesses at that point. You know what I mean? No one's ever going to know if someone, well, that's it, right? Someone might not ever know that your competitors have got hold of X or Y. And they can do...
Not every industry has an entire news, like...
Exactly.
Sub industry around it, right? Like...
Or let's be honest, some industries, they don't care.
also that. Yeah, definitely. I think it's an interesting thing where you think about the security of data on your site compared to the security of, like, the users actually browsing around and finding stuff. And what shows up on the SERPs can be so different to what actually people are seeing when it comes to the site. I think you used the example earlier of, like, talking about how stuff in the URL can change what happens on the page. And we had a thing where, going back to crawling as well and kind of tying those two things together, we had relative URLs as categorization on an e-commerce site. And it just infinitely spun, you know, category upon category. So it'd be category slash whatever it is, slash category, slash this, and just the subfolders would just build infinitely. And I was like, my crawler's been going for like 2 days. This site has like 500 pages. It should not be doing this kind of thing. And we looked at it and was a tiny little thing. You mentioned, like, oh, it's a little JavaScript link that Google just decided to chuck on the end of it. It's like, how many of these are actually indexed? Like, oh, turns out hundreds and hundreds of them. Like, oh, God.
And this is it, right? Is it's quite often stupid, mundane. The best way to think about it is to talk about physical security for a second, I suppose, because that's a bit more easy for people to understand, right? So I listened to a podcast called Darknet Diaries, which, if you don't listen to it, is absolutely fantastic, all stuff in the security space. And they were talking about, I think there was a very famous, I think it was kind of done as an exercise more than anything, a bunch of red teamers, which is what they call offensive security experts, basically, people who go out and try and sounds like the best job in the world, but they basically get to play spies for money against businesses, right? And they managed to, I can't remember the details, but basically they managed to get the information out by sending it via, was it a light on the fax machine or something?
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and then basically just counting binary, basically, and getting the information out. That's insane, right? That is Jason Bourne's, right?
With the video games, sorry to briefly tangent, the guy that did that did it through like a Fire Stick in a hotel.
In a hotel room,
He was under like house arrest, essentially, in a hotel room. And they took away his phone, they took away his laptop. They're like, cool, there's no way you can do this.
Yeah.
But there's an Amazon Fire Stick in the back of the TV, and he used that to then hack that. It's like, you can do mad stuff with just a fax machine or a Fire Stick or whatever it is.
Well, the best example on this podcast was an interview with a lady who did this offensive security thing. And she was like, do you know what the best tool in my toolboxes, I've got a big fake pregnancy belly that I wear, because who is going to shut the door on a pregnant woman? No one's going to. And as soon as you're in, again, it's the stupid thing. Put on a high-vis vest and like you're in an office now, right, Jack? I would notice if somebody was in my office in a high-vis vest, because I work from home. But when you're...
There are multiple businesses in this building. And then
when you're in a shared space, right? So when I was used to work in an office, we would have people coming around and checking fire, the fire alarms and things like that. And again, I remember, funny if my friend who I was talking about earlier, he went on a security course, and there was a guy there who said that, whenever he was red teaming, he would put on a high-vis jacket and he would pick locks. And he said that he was only ever stopped once, which was by somebody who asked him if he wanted a cup of tea. Because, and this is what I'm talking about.
Oh, it must be a locksmith, I guess.
Like. Yeah. Sometimes these things are so, and this relates to websites, right? Sometimes the things are so mundane and so daft that you overlook them in the name of really complicated things. And sometimes, as you say, it is just a tiny, tiny little link on the page, or the fact that the page canonicalizes to whatever's in the address bar. So then you can actually escape out of the canonical tag and then just start basically running JavaScript on the client. And then at that point, you can do whatever you want with the client's, well, not quite whatever you want with the client's PC, but close enough. You know what I mean? Sometimes these things are so minor and so tiny, and it's not, you know, infiltrating the mainframe and all that stuff. Sometimes it's tiny. Tom Antony from Search Pilot has done a YouTube talk about, or the talk that's on YouTube rather, about fuzzing, which is basically just putting stuff that isn't expected into text boxes. So if you're given a text box on a site, what happens if you start putting HTML into it? What happens if you start putting JavaScript into it? What happens if you start putting JavaScript inside HTML tags, inside other HTML tags, inside script tags? how far down does it strip these things out? And it sounds mad, but guess what? If somebody stands to make $1 million out of doing it, or, you know, whatever, why would they? Why wouldn't they rather? Well, because it's illegal and blah, blah, blah. But you know what I mean? Someone will.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing to kind of wrap things up with, is kind of like the, we think about it as a big deal, right? We think about hacking as a big deal. Oh my God, it's going to take down the entire website. But it can be the simplest, tiniest little thing. Again, using the physics example of like, oh yeah, I wonder if you could just wear like a boiler suit that looks like a locksmith kind of outfit. Like, I don't know what I've never met a locksmith. I don't know what they dress like. Maybe they're just dressed like me. Maybe they're just in like a band t-shirt and some jeans. I don't know. Like, should they be in high vis? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
But high vis makes it look more authoritative. So you can just kind of, walking through a door.
I always think, like, what would happen if you left a business on Friday and then on Monday morning just tried to walk through reception?
Yeah, definitely. And like, especially with like shared buildings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there is a shared space not too far from us where we host our Search and Orange events, and they have a receptionist on there. And I just like, I buzz in once and I'm like, hey, it's me. And they're like, yeah, cool. No worries.
Yep.
And let me in. But like you said, if you then leave and then come back a couple of days later, but you're actually not with the company anymore. Oh, sorry, I haven't got my card, or I haven't got my badge or whatever. Be like, oh, no worries, Jack. Come on in.
Yeah. Like, I was in my old job for 10 plus years. You know what I mean? I was very much part of the furniture. And especially if you've got a back door or something like that, spokers normally go through or whatever, but it's the easiest one to get through from the car park or whatever, you know what I mean? It's amazing what you could probably get away with. Oh God, let's not end it there. Oh no.
bad encouragement on the listeners and viewers. any closing thoughts then, Chris? Let's go away from encouraging our listeners to become hackers and thieves and things like that.
I say the big thing is make friends with your network team. So especially if you work for a big site, especially if you have needs to access the site in large scale outside of your local VPN, whatever. Quite often, if you are in a local VPN, they'll let anything happen. So Screaming Frog and things like that will be fine. But if you're trying to use a web-based or cloud-based crawler, there you might start to struggle. So make friends with those teams. You don't have to be their best man. That's a bizarre amount of commitment I put into the pit.
You really got into networking.
It's taken me 20 years for this podcast. make friends with them. In the same way that having a front-end dev or developers who get SEO, they don't have to be really committed to it, but having someone on that team that can go, oh, is that going to cause a problem with the SEO team? Is a huge thing, right? Sometimes security teams are a little bit more cagey about the stuff because it's their job, right? the head of security at my old business, I found out he lived in my village, and one day I was walking down the street that I knew he lived on, and I thought, I wonder which one's Dave's house. And then I was like, oh, it'll be that one with the gate that's 10 foot taller than everybody else's, the four security cameras, the no cold callers sign. But that's Dave's house. That rings. Yeah. That sounds like a man who fears Gmail. But yeah, make friends with them. Ultimately, you know, we're human beings who want an easy day, or our lives to be easy. We don't want to be arguing over the silly little websites we work on, right? So make friends with them. You're all there trying to do the same thing.
Exactly. And where is the best place for people to follow you across the internet, whether that's social media, your own site, all that kind of stuff?
Chris-span.co.uk is not as updated as often as I would like, but I am going to try and do a bit more of that this year. Also on Twitter, I will not call it X.
We refuse to call it X on this show. I'm glad you're joining there. Yeah.
At 503 Blaze It, I mainly use it to complain about our government. But every so often I do tweet SEO stuff. So, you know, here or there. And that's it. I mean, LinkedIn, if you want to see a slightly more professional picture of me, I guess.
Awesome. Well, folks, the links for all that will be in the show description. If you go and look at the links down below, go and follow Chris and get some complaints about the government, SEO tweets and everything in between. Thanks for joining me, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And you.
And that wraps up episode 2 of season 3. If you've been watching this on YouTube or Spotify, thank you so much. I hope you're appreciating the visual side of things we're now doing with the podcast. If you're listening anywhere else, of course, a huge thank you. If you've stuck around for a very long time, or if this is your first episode, welcome. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Chris. I thought it was really interesting to get a different perspective on cybersecurity and how it kind of relates to SEO in many different ways. I have some fantastic guests coming up over the next few weeks, including the likes of Alex Harford, including the likes of Matt Coley, including Riley Hope, and including Nate Matheson as well. A variety of different topics. And of course, we'll be back towards the end of the month. That is the last episode in January. It will be Mark and I reuniting like we used to do back in season 2. All recapping the monthly SEO news. So we will keep you up to date. If you're not already subscribed to Core Updates and getting the weekly updates, we'll be cherry picking the highlights from across the month and running them down and debating, discussing, and I'm sure fighting over them as well, as Mark and I always do. So please do stay tuned for that. Like I said, fantastic guests coming up throughout the season and plenty more planned for the rest of the year for Search with Candor. Hopefully you'll be back next week. I know I'll be back next week. And if you will, thank you so much for listening and have a lovely week.